I'm delighted to be here and to see Matthew's new work, because we did a show in Leeds in
2005.
So 5 years on, it's good to see new work. And actually, I think one thing we might talk about this afternoon is how the work has changed and developed. But I just wanted to, first of all, introduce Matthew with a brief biography, because he was born in Keighley, in West Yorkshire, but was brought up in East Africa, then came back to the UK and did a degree at Loughborough in silversmithing and jewellery, which is, I think, is an interesting consideration when you think about the work. And while he was doing that course, I think he realised he didn't actually want to be a jeweller or a silversmith, but wanted to make works of art. But then, what it had taught him with the...
I was suggested to me to go to do sculpture. And I was accepted into the sculpture course, but they wanted me to repeat a year, you see. And I said, no, I didn't want to do that. Because all my friends were in the year. You know, it was just like that. So I just thought, well, when I leave, it doesn't really matter. I don't know, it didn't feel like it mattered what I studied. Because I was learning to a high quality, and that's what I wanted to learn.
But needless to say, you did go on and start making work.
It was
work that got shown, because Matthew's had exhibitions nationally and internationally. And I suppose the kind of milestone moments, like he was nominated for the Commissar Art Prize in Manchester in 2003, and an East Commission in 2003. East is a thing that happens in Norwich, very, very highly regarded. Is it a biannual East?
It's biannual now. It was an annual thing.
And then he was selected for the British Art Show in 2005. They have them every 5 years, and they're a kind of review of new developments in British art at a certain moment. There's one. So that's an introduction to Matthew, and I thought I would start talking about, when I first came to Walsall to see the new art gallery in 2000, this was a cafe, and I remember coming here and actually being the only person in the cafe. I thought it was such a great idea, and it was this, it's quite an audacious thing to put this cafe at the top of a tower in Walsall. And I'm kind of, in a way, I'm sorry it's gone, but, you know, things change. So it was a kind of utopian moment, being there, this cafe in Walsall. And Matthew's work is about utopias in many ways. And I think, and now it's here, it's kind of, I'm using this word very poetically, it's on the kind of ruin of that utopia. And those two things in Matthew's work, I think, are key. The idea of ruin, a kind of modern, futuristic ruin, and the idea of a utopia. So I wonder if that would lead into any thoughts.
I think it's more, I don't know if it's about sort of producing a utopia. I think it's possibly about more the sort of search for it. So I think it is one of those sort of unattainable things, you know. And in trying to attain that utopia, I think there are many sort of ruins or past things that speak of that search. So I think it's and that's where the two sort of combine. And I know I was talking to you about the I had a recent visit to Kenya to visit my family, and I was talking to you about an area of beach that we go to quite a lot, and you have to go through the ruins of what was this ideal town. And I think that also had an influence on producing this piece of work, insofar as that it was just a series of walls that was left behind, and it was very much a sort of almost like a grid system or frame system, which is sort of which I've sort of loosely adopted on here as well. So, yeah.
But the idea of artists being interested in ruins is not a new thing. It was one of the key elements of the Romantic period when artists would go and make pictures.
Beautiful ruins.
Images of ruins. And I think there's something of the picturesque in your work as well, in a way. And in an ironic sense. Would you say that was...
I am interested in the picturesque and the landscape.
Yeah,
I think so, but I think there is a sort of ironicness in it, but like with the use of the coloured perspex and stuff, I use the colours because it is, to me, they refer to sort of tropical sun and sky, basically, and also that looking through and altering that the perspex does, it almost puts a sort of country sheen, sort of landscape sheen on it almost. But there are references to landscape. Landscape in there, and some of the materials that I've found have been directly weathered by being in the landscape, like the piece with the aeroplane on it, or so I find things that are directly from a landscape.
There are these,
so it is referenced in that manner. It's not necessarily referenced in the manner where I'll paint a landscape or put a landscape into it.
But there are these continual references to an exterior world. There's an interior life going on. But they're kind of idealised images as well, like the South Sea Island down here.
I think that's just tied in. I think things are sort of cross referenced. And reuse. So you'll see that half of the built piece in that dome structure within the palm trees is also in that building. Which is taken from there. So, but then that is a landscape as well, of. I don't know whether it's supposed to be something in the future or something now. I mean, you see things like that now. But then this photograph here, which is taken, is a found image, is of something that was built in the 70s. Yet it still looks incredibly of something of the future. But it isn't.
And I guess they were meant to be at the time, weren't they? Visions of the future at the present.
Exactly. So there's a sort of, I think sometimes the pieces are constantly, sometimes turning in on themselves.
Well, the whole project was conceived around a title, The Chemisphere, which is from 1960. And
it was an
architectural project. It was
a nickname given to a building by an architect called John Lautner. It was a West Coast American architect, and it was an octagonal building on a single concrete stanchion, I suppose. I don't know. I just liked it as a collective. It was just this collective noun, I suppose, and it almost seemed that it just fitted with the time that I was at in Africa in. I don't know, it just fitted the sort of madness that was going on, or the freneticness that was going on around me at the time.
This was during your recent visit?
Was just during the recent visit. And it also seemed to fit with the like I was saying to you earlier, the orange colour of the perspex as well. It's sort of slightly acidic, it's acidy in a way. the chemosphere, it just had a slightly sort of a toxicness to it in a way, you know, and a good, it was just a good noun for a collection of things or a collection of built environment, really.
Yeah, just carry that sense of a contained world.
Yeah.
But
I don't know whether it's a good, you know, I don't know if it's a containment of sort of idyll or a containment of, you know, horribleness or something.
Dystopia.
I don't know. Or dystopia.
And utopia all wrapped up together. Yeah. But it's such an evocative title.
Yeah, it is.
Because it's almost, it could be the title of a science fiction novel.
Yeah.
And it's very much of that period, 1960.
Yeah, but it's something it's something incredibly sort of futuristic, but it's also anchored in the 60s, and you know, but also the 60s was, I think, at the time when it was built, it was an incredibly optimistic time as well. So it's sort of, you know, does it speak of, you know, oh, that optimism is now sort of faded massively, you know. So I just like that sort of double-endedness or the ambiguity of it as well, you know.
So. And we're talking about that interior, exterior thing going on in the work, because one thing we were talking about earlier was how, and you didn't actually plan it this way, but I felt they had such a relationship with what was out there in the city, and we were talking about how they were made for this room, but probably not in that way, because I mean the fact, if you move around them and look through them, there are certain moments when you actually see what's out there through the sculpture.
Through the around there, yeah. When you see the town hall through that tunnel bit.
And it kind of, for me, it almost affected the way I regarded the world out there. It seemed to suddenly become almost at one remove, like these are spaces in which there are no people, but it's almost, when you look outside then, you see people moving about.
I know, it picks up.
There's a kind of an unreal quality about it, about what's out there, almost. Makes you see reality differently.
And the colours of the perspective as well, because you see them kind of transformed by this kind of, the perspective.
Yeah. It's quite nice the way it does react onto that, but then it was never the main intention of the piece, so I sort of start to think now it'd be nice to see them in a room without any of the madness going on out there.
There's too much reality here.
Yeah, possibly. I don't mind. I do. It doesn't worry me too much. But it wasn't built. With that in mind, the main thing that interested me was the actual fact that the windows were going to be open and the amount of light that was going to come in. Hence, you know, the perspex and I was interested in that title, the chemosphere, and seeing how the light sort of reacted and create, because the pieces, as the light changes with the perspex, the pieces sort of, the mood of the pieces change. The perspex sort of builds a sort of atmosphere into the piece, you know, and that's what was more interesting to me. But I don't know, maybe I should have paid another visit just to have seen. I didn't realise that all this would be so visible as how it's ended up being. But I don't think, I think that sort of works, you know, I think it's another thing for the pieces
that's
to work
dimension
with, basically,
to it.
And it does, and it does work with the, I suppose, with the different layers and windows and, you know, horizontals and verticals within the pieces and seeing it on the outside as well, you know.
One thing we didn't talk about, but it strikes me now, is why you positioned them as you did in here, and why you didn't maybe put one over there and two over there.
Because this is how I built them in the studio, and also I didn't want them. I wanted them to remain as more of a whole, or three separate things that were a whole, rather than three separate things. one over there and one over there and one over there. So that was pure and simple. That
you always intended them to have a quite specific relationship between.
Yeah.
Can you say any more about that relationship, or is it?
Yeah. I mean, because originally, and down to sort of limitations, I wanted it to be more of a whole. You know, I wanted the pieces to actually connect at some point.
Yeah.
And also there to be a much more, a bigger roof structure that connected the three. But it didn't, logistically it was just a nightmare within the studio, and I couldn't realise that, so I had to basically compromise.
But I feel the
old... And sort of just leave them as these sort of individual things, but still being connected under the one title, really. See, I would have still had the one title, but then there would have been three very separate sort of sculptures, really, and I don't think it would have worked as well, you know. And plus, I quite like, you know, the way things interact with each other when you're viewing the works, when they're quite close together. Mm. You know.
And the way you can look through one and see another.
Yeah, exactly.
But at the same time, they do seem to me to have that each has its own kind of individual properties, which makes it quite distinct from another.
But that was the idea. I would have liked to have tried to have brought those together more, but I just wasn't able to do it at the time.
So they have these internal rhythms in each between the, you know, formal characteristics, but then they sort of transfer meaning or formal characteristics one to another as well, so it's a kind of different rhythm going on.
Yeah, I think materially they sort of connect to each other more so than...
Yeah.
Because I was on about the fact that it would be a single piece of work, so the differences would be, I was thinking more in the terms of a sort of layout of a house or something, where you'd have different rooms, and then these would, instead of them being rooms, the rooms would actually be these objects, and there would be corridors going around them, so, and hence why you have almost different zones or different areas. You know, that's the reason why they're not connected, maybe sort of architecturally or.
But that idea of zoning is interesting, because that's something that's been present in your work for a while, really. Mm. And it, for me, it's something that's taken from sort of modern city planning as well, where you kind of create zones of activity that are interconnected. So there's a, you know, a pleasure zone and a work zone and a home zone, if you like. And that was very much present in the exhibition we did with you in Leeds. And it looked very different, really, didn't it? And it was very much...
From this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it
although
showed...
Although it did... This has sort of gone back to that in some ways, in terms of the layering up of the boards and the building up.
Yeah.
Like I built up the landscape in there. You know. So I sort of have reverted back insofar as what I was doing before this was very, very tight, sort of almost models. You know, although they weren't models to be built as such, they were much more just singular pieces. Whereas this has gone back to sort of putting together of component parts almost.
You know. But I'm interested in how that relationship between the work and the viewer has kind of progressed. Because the ones in Leeds, they look very much... I mean, they weren't architectural models, but I think on first glance people might have thought they weren't until they started to...
Well, it was a play on an architectural plan, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was a sort of master plan.
And you kind of look down on them, in a way, because they were at floor level, but built up from floor level. So it was almost like you were looking down into an idealised
lakeside scene.
Yeah, yeah. And then the exhibition at Kerry Hand Gallery that I saw, Sons of the Pioneers. Sons of Pioneers. And they were all, they were kind of, put it crudely, kind of house-type structures, all on plinths.
I think they were sort of, I think the idea behind that was making a series of buildings for us, I suppose, an idea like community in a way, you know. The titles of the houses were sort of specific to use in a way.
And they're quite uniformly arranged in the room, and you would go around and kind of peer into them.
Yeah.
And it was that look, it's like a journey for the eye through each.
Yeah, I suppose each one of them was like a sort of story in a way. I don't know.
Yeah. And these.
And these have that as well. Yeah. But I do want there to be. I do sort of entertain the idea of a sort of narrative or whatever. When I'm making them, I do think about. I think about stories of. When I was a young kid or whatever, you know, it reminds me of that, and I do sometimes introduce elements to that, and then at the same time I'm introducing elements from my present as well, you know. So it is quite a sort of mix, and that, you know,
something you read about,
and I do want to entertain the fact that there is a mix of a lot of different things going on, you know. I just think that's the way the world is in a way. So there is part, you know, there is story, there is, you know, formal sculpture going on, and there is, you know, it is about the, at the same time I think it's sort of about image making as well, you know.
And there is you did write about your work which is something that interested me, because you said you wanted people to kind of take away the impression that something had just happened, somebody had just been there, which isn't, to me, it's not quite, it's kind of a subtle difference between that and saying they're just spaces devoid of people. It's like...
Well, when I started making the buildings, I was sort of making spaces for people to, I suppose, convert and do their own thing in a way, you know. I think I've always been fascinated by empty factory buildings and things like that, where activities happened and things have been left behind, you know. But then they're not, because they're not then. They're not really new. They're not really new spaces. But then at the same time, they're not really. I don't know if they're made in a way where the activity that's been going on there is not always that evident. You know, there might be a picture or something left behind, but they're still quite sort of pristine in a way.
You know. But in a way, you are kind of encouraging people. I might be wrong too. To bring their own sort of narratives
which I think is quite interesting. It's quite good, you know.
But it's often something artists resist as well, isn't it? In terms of making abstract work, like they don't want people. They say there should be no, unless you're a narrative painter. You don't want people to bring
narrative.
Inevitably, they do. I think.
Yeah.
But I think that's why. Children particularly like the work as well.
I think so as well.
I think it's partly the fact that they kind of look like models. But I don't think it's just that. I think it's this, that they can look into it and imagine. It's that sort of a kind of catalyst to the imagination.
I think so. I think I would go along with that. Yeah, definitely. You know, they are there. I think that's why I've never been interested in about putting people in them. So I think that fixes them too much, you know. And also, it's never been about that. It's always been more about, you know, the form of them or the material that they're made out of, or you know, and the fact that the scale, that I've never worked to a scale either, you know, so, and that always adds something to it, that always causes a sort of, not an upset, but it sort of, it offsets, it disrupts your way of looking at them.
And the way you
know,
read
and the way you read them, because you can, you know, you can be looking at something that you think is maybe a model or an idea for something, but then you sort of realise what it's made out of, and then you realise that there's, you know, the scale's not there, or, you know, you still notice, you know, screws and things and the way that it's put together.
Kind of a model maker's nightmare.
Yeah. Yeah, possibly. But I mean, you know, because it's sort of anti the way I think architects' models are built in a way. You know. But then, you know, I've had plenty of conversations with architects, and they quite like they find it quite a sort of refreshing way of sort of building something or imagining something.
Yeah.
You know. So. But it's never, you know, these things are never made with the intention of, you know, reproducing them as, or the buildings from Sons of Pioneers, say, or part of those roofs, or, you know, like this apartment, I don't know what I would call this top apartment piece, or this triangular piece. They're not there to be realised and scaled up, you know.
Yeah.
They're purely there in their own right, and that's as far as I would take them. You know.
And just to go back to the way they've moved from being floor pieces to plinth pieces, back to being sort of platform pieces.
Mm.
Well, these for me are kind of sculptural in the sense that our relationship with them as viewers is not just through the eye, like maybe Sons of the Pioneers was more so. So it's kind of a journey for the eyes, you know, looking through them. But our relationship with these is much more about, you know, it's kind of bodily relationship.
Mm.
And how you can move between them.
Mm.
And in order to view them.
Well, that's why I wanted to make them so you could possibly move through them as
yeah,
well, you see.
Yeah.
And they're sort of getting to that point. So the model, or that element of the model is. Because I wanted to start making larger work that still have an element that was small scale in it.
Yeah. You know. Well, they do both. Really.
Yeah, they do both, yeah. And that's what my sort of aim was. And so, because every, you know, a lot of people I spoke to were saying, well, you could enlarge, you know, you could enlarge the smaller pieces of work, but I never really wanted to do that, and so I've just I wanted to, and I'm at the point where I'm trying to expand the pieces, but using the smaller models to work from, not without expanding those. So I'm using those to expand from to produce larger work, but still containing those pieces.
And you do that in a literal way as well, because you kind of you recycle. Not only do you recycle material, you know, the basic material.
I recycle
material,
the work as well.
Recycle the sculpture, the work, by taking bits and modifying it.
Yeah, it's not really recycling, but it's not. I don't really call it. I mean, it's just material, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, it's like when I use found material, I don't do it for recycling purposes. I just do it because I find the material interesting, or it's, you know, it's like I was saying about finding material in the landscape or the weathered material or whatever. I use it because it speaks of, you know, it sort of speaks of the landscape, which I quite like, you know. But then I think pulling things out of skips or found things that way are still from a landscape, you know. But I use just as much new material, and I buy just as much new material as I do finding things as well. You know. So that's the sort of process that I work in.
But whether you buy it or you find it, your relationship that material is quite, it's a sculptural one. Yeah. It's not like a model maker's relationship where you might find something to represent something out. Mm-hmm. You're interested in the quality of the material itself in a way, aren't you? And so you said that the material nature of things leads you to, is often a way in or a starting point.
It can be, yeah, it can be, and also, yeah, it can be a way in, but also it can still fit an idea that I'm thinking of, but then in reverse, a found object or the material can provide the idea, you know. I sort of work quite loosely in that way, you know. But I think I am. I fully am interested in material, and you know, from I suppose more of a sculptor's point of view than a model maker's point of view, because they're not models.
No. Well, we've been talking for 35 minutes now. See, about. Has anybody got any questions they'd like to ask Matthew about the work? Anything at all?
I was interested in, you talked a bit about the collage, the pictures, the photographs that you use. Don't know if we quite sort of got to whether you really wanted us to, whether you wanted them to suggest something about the piece that you stuck them onto, or if you want, what exactly cues you were giving us there, what you wanted to do with those.
Well, I think all the because
they're good fun. They kind of give it a whole different, a slightly different.
Yeah. They do. I think they do act as something to take you, or they give you another lead to somewhere. I think this image here is Nigel's talking about sort of reusing of old work and stuff. I mean, that's a photograph of a piece of work that I made a few years ago, but then I've spliced it with a piece of architecture by, I think that's a John Wallotton building as well. And the reasons for putting them together is purely that I work in quite a sort of instinctive manner, and there isn't always a dead set of reason because it felt right to do it, and I just put them together. And again, I'm just playing about this idea of, you know, production or producing a building or a piece of architecture. Yet at the same time, it's like I was playing about the idea of like a billboard as well. So if a piece is taken as a whole piece of building or architecture, then I was working on the idea of having images within buildings, which you sort of see around you all the time. You know, I'm like a shopping centre or a cinema complex or some sort of complex which is, you know, for housing, entertainment. I don't know. What exactly, but the idea of the images are just sort of advertising purposes, but they have maybe more of a personal relation to me.
You talked about when you were in Africa as well, and those big advertising boards, you know, ours are always just printed and
hand-painted
ones there as well, which adds a real character to it. Yeah. There's something about aspiration in terms of, because there's something about the architectural modelling itself, isn't it, that's kind of aspirational, that's about kind of ideas about better future and things like that, and the language of advertising too is all about that. Will towards improvement.
They felt to me like they could either be source material and kind of clues to the process, or they could be, as he said, more tied into the modernness of these things and the art of these buildings.
And I think formally they add
something.
It doesn't
have to be the
same. I think formally they add something as well, don't they?
Yeah.
Because it's, the whole lot of the work is...
Well, they add a sort of another level to it as well.
Yeah.
They add another sort of...
Yeah.
dynamic to it. Yeah. So the piece becomes a sort of image as well as a piece of sculpture. Which,
yeah. And you were talking about the images in that far one there.
Those images were originally done as proposals for. It wasn't really a competition, was it? I think three or four artists, me included, were asked to put in a proposal for Bradford for some massive awnings. Over buildings that were being redeveloped or over buildings. And that was the ones, there's one there and then there's one round the back and there's one inside there. There's also one on the end here. They were done as a proposal for Bradford and they basically, I went to Bradford and photographed a lot of architecture there, cut it up and made
things. And added other things.
Things as well. And they really liked them, but then they said I got a call back saying, oh, no, they were too controversial. People might believe them in terms of this is what's going to happen to their city. Because there was a lot of people that were already very angry about what was happening to Bradford in terms of it being chopped up and knocked down and that sort of thing. But I mean, at the moment, Bradford's half not knocked down and nothing's been rebuilt, so.
No, but it's an interesting comment on the planning.
I thought their reaction was very interesting as well. But I think they would have looked good on a very large scale.
Yeah. One thing I think has happened in your work is you've taken it up to this high level. You set yourself certain parameters, certain disciplines as well in terms of like working deliberately just with four colours. Four perspex colours, which are orange and yellow and the grey. What was the fourth colour?
It was a blue.
A blue.
There is a blue somewhere. There is a blue in there, I think. It's a very light blue.
And also the other colours, the painted colours. There's a yellow and a blue.
And a black.
And a black. That kind of discipline in the world. Maybe discipline.
I've just been interested in the way people like the constructivists or the style of people like that worked with a limited palette of colour, and it almost provided a certain rigorousness about dealing with that, And also, I just always remember as a kid, being told about the Tanzanian flag and the colours represented certain things, like the yellow was the sun and the blue was the sea and the green was the land and the black in it was represented the people. So I quite like that. So I've lifted that in a certain sort of way as well. But they don't actually mean anything. But I've just used that and used the way colour from. Can work like that. It just provides. I don't know. I like the order it sort of provides, as opposed to using masses and masses of colour. I don't know. Maybe it's too. I think for this day and age, it would be too authoritarian. I do quite like that.
But it's, in a way, it's a distortion of another utopian.
Because
constructivist art, the 1950s, was itself a reference to post-war revolutionary art and the idea that you could make a kind of an ideal system.
It's also laying down a system to work to, laying down parameters to work within, and you can't sort of move outside of those, otherwise you're not part of that movement or whatever, so it's a sort of comment on that in a way. But also the use of the black structures was also like in sort of comic books or whatever, or animations, things are a black,
yes.
a sort of black, a black line box. Around.
Yeah.
So So the black lines are almost like a framing device as well, you know, and it was a way of building from one to another, and also when you look through them, you know, they frame off particular areas, you know, which you can look at or whatever, you know, so they're almost sort of framing devices within the world.
And referring to comic books and that black.
Yeah, well, it's like a storyboard.
Exactly.
Almost,
yeah.
You know, more sort of storyboard than animation, really. But then I was thinking when I was doing it that they do sort of animate the piece at certain times, you know, and the way that they cross over each other as well, you know. Plus they provide a sort of definite structure within the piece as well, you know.
Was the structure very planned meticulously from the beginning, or did it sort of evolve as you're building it?
It's evolved.
Yeah.
You know, there were certain things, because you saw the pieces early on, there were certain things that I'd made that were shown somewhere else, but they were always being built with the aim of this show. And so, no, I do. I work in a manner where things I make things and get to a certain point and then decide right, I need something for there or something for there. And I can often end up making it and it not working, and then it'll be moved somewhere else. You know, so it is a sort of, I think that's where the sort of formal element comes in, really, because it's not. You know, it's all weighed up by sort of weights and measures and sights and levels and how things fit and that sort of thing. So I suppose it's quite an old school way of working, the way, you know.
And interestingly, in the studio now, the studio is not small, but it's not as big as this space at all. So you could never lay them out like this and get all the way around them to move them, could you? They were all kind of all piled on top of each other. And
well, that was another interesting thing.
You couldn't get to like one side.
So there were sides that I couldn't see when I was building them, which was sort of interesting. But then you view architecture or view buildings in a manner where you never see the other side of it here. When you see pick the images of architecture in books or whatever, you're always given the prime shot, as it were. You know, so you never see any of the other side. So I didn't really worry. I sort of found that quite interesting, because then the other side would sort of develop sort of unseen in a way. And it wasn't, I think this side especially, it was sort of dealt with when I got into the gallery, really.
So which is the front?
If there is, this is the way that I approached it in the studio, this is the way that I see it. And from this side and this side, that's what I have. I don't know, maybe that gives an indication.
And is that still the front? No,
I think it has a front in it. This would be the main. This would be the main area. So I suppose there is more. There is, in some ways, more activity going on this side. Yeah. So this would be the size of the
studio.
Very pictorial. These would be much closer together. So probably about this side.
So did you have them, all three of them, set up?
This one was right up against the wall. In fact, that column. I don't think that column was up. I don't think that was right. But it was made, so it wasn't.
Yeah.
So. Yes, it came from.
Is that the piece around the corner related to all this? I'm not sure whether that should be there.
Yeah, I like it, but it seems to have a different form. It's got kind of things going on.
It's the top bit, isn't it?
One of the things I wanted to do was possibly put the title within the piece of work, and it wasn't allowing me to do it. And then I sort of made that. I should have left that out.
We don't let you take it away now. Yeah.
So, and I should have just kept it as a piece on its own. Really.
It looks like it's part of a different exhibition. It looks like it's part of a more limited series.
Yeah, I think it's too much of a distraction.
But then you've always got that welcome to sign on the outside.
Well, it plays with that sort of idea.
Anyone got any more questions? Okay, thank both Nigel and Matthew, and thank all of you for coming along. Thank you so much.
Utopian moment. I was talking about, in a jokey way, this being a lost utopia, but actually this whole, just remember this building, it came at that certain period in recent history, which is, we're all worried it's going to disappear now. All that kind of great work was done in terms of making galleries and theatres.
This has been built
as people going, giving access to the arts to more and more people. And let's try and hang on to that idea.
This has been built as a hub to expand from as well, hasn't it? It's very much an important, very important part of us.
Yeah.
It's great the fact that it's a very visible building from. It's certainly not hidden away. Like a lot of galleries are built and hidden away, whereas this is very much a sort of focal point of Walsall, which is really good, I think.
And vice versa as well, because the architects really designed it so that it had a very direct relationship with Walsall, because this came as a result of an architectural competition, and some of the architects, you could tell, were kind of wanting to hide from the fact that it was in Walsall, because, let's pretend we're not actually in Walsall and make a very closed structure that you can imagine is somewhere else.
Because Walsall's not very well known place.
These architects really kind of embraced the idea of being in Walsall. Absolutely. Wherever you are in the gallery, you can see where you are in relation to the town. The town is always part of your experience. Which makes this gallery now idiosyncratic, very interesting and challenging, because you have to take on the town as well. You say you can take on the town as a work. But
does work well, I think.
Yeah. I do, and I would be interested to see it now in a different kind of
way. Yeah, no, it will be. Definitely. I think I'm very happy with the work and the way it has worked.
I think the strength of the work is its eclecticness. Like, I'm from Bath, where everything's really generic. Bath stone, and coloured. So I think, for me, I think the open windows really can work well.
But if these windows looked out over that, they would really jar.
Yeah.
I think it would work. I think it would still work all right, though.
Yeah.
I think it still would work all right.
The environment.
Yeah, but I think, call it, call it what you will, the work, but the angularness of this against what you'd see in Bath or whatever, I think would work, and also the perspex colour on most things, it always works. It's almost like, I hate to say, but it is almost like a sort of fail-safe. It's just that sort of sunglasses effect on the brain.
Interesting is research last week on John Piper's images of that he made in 1942 when he went there as a war artist, because it was heavily bombed during the war. There were these kind of, they call it Baedeker raids on British towns as a response to Britain bombing places in Europe. The Baedeker, because they picked on cultural sites. And what he showed about is very interesting, because they're very dramatic and they're almost theatrical pictures of building. So it was interesting that you should say that, because I could see Matthew's work working in relation to the John Piper picture of that.
Right.